Blog Talk Radio.
Now, now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
So, Danny, we have Sami Zayn in good standing with the Bloodline. Who saw this coming? Tons of he's been very helpful to the Bloodline lately, including Solo Sikoa tonight. Roman Reigns returns next week. I'm happy that the crowd is cheering Sami. I'm not sure if WWE wants him cheering him so much right now, but I think the mystery is, how is Roman Reigns going to react to Sami? And when Paul Heyman has a chance to speak about him, what will Paul Heyman say about Sami? And then we have the layer of Solo Sikoa walking in when Sami's on a hot streak, favoring him over Jay, and Jay not being happy about it. They've managed to, for me, get the Bloodline back to near the level or at the level they were at during the Thunderdome era, when the dynamic between Roman and Jay and Paul Heyman was such a strong storyline. How do you feel about where they are with Sami and also the addition of Solo Sikoa?
Yeah, absolutely. I got such a kick out of seeing Jay trying to step up, and he was brushed off by Solo in favor of Sami, and Sami just looked like, oh my gosh, he was just validated, and that just made his life to be acknowledged by Solo. So,
but of course, he can't handle it well. He has to throw it back at the face of Jay, which is going to get him in trouble. Like, if you're on Sammy's side, you're like, Sami, don't be so cocky about it. Like, you're in a good spot. Hold back your exuberance and don't throw it back at Jay.
Yeah, he just can't help himself. And I think Reigns is, and Roman Reigns is going to be pleased with him in the beginning. Paul Heyman seems like, hey, when he stopped him earlier in the first segment, he was like, hey, you're taking away my spot. He's like, you're stepping on my toes here. So I don't think Paul Heyman's going to be on his side too much. But Reigns, I think he's going to be in line with Solo and Jimmy as far as taking a liking to Sami Zayn. And Jay and Paul Heyman are kind of going to be on the outs with him, at least for right now, until, you know, I guess the eventual dissension gets the better of them, I guess we could see coming.
And of course, it's pro wrestling. So this is not, you know, they're not going to retire all together in 6 years, a happy family. You know, there's going to be some sort of a breakup. And the question is when and how does that happen? And is it built around an excuse for Roman to lose? Is it Sami eventually tries too hard, gets overexcited, overexuberant, and costs Roman the match, and that's the end? And it's really largely about that, and what happens to Sami after that is secondary, not a non-factor, but secondary. Or has this kind of turned into, no, it's not about Sami costing Roman one or both belts eventually. It really is now turning into, we got something going with Sami. You know, it's one thing in Montreal for him to get cheered, but he's getting cheered in other places. He got cheered tonight. Now,
they
it helps
loved
to
it
be,
tonight. It was insane.
And it helps to stand opposite of Logan Paul. But so I want to know what you think is Sami's, like, how should WWE and Paul Levesque be looking at Sami's potential over the next year or two as, and it's weird to say this about Sami, but an emerging star.
I know it seemed like it was so obvious a few weeks ago in the segment with Kevin Owens about where this was going. And now it seems like they got the hot hand. So it's like, do they keep playing it out? Do they go with, because I was pretty sold, and I think I'm still sold, that it's going to be the whole Kevin Owens dynamic is going to be what breaks him off from the Usos and the Bloodline and everything. And I think, like Todd Martin alluded to on the Fix, I think it's going to be at WrestleMania, I would say, I guess at the latest, Owens and Zayn go against the Usos for the tag titles.
Yeah.
But where that happens, ooh, that is a good question. But I think Jay just spearheads the revolt against Sami.
Yeah.
And at some point, and they just listen to Jay because he's family and like, okay, we're going to kick this guy out of the group. And that's what kind of puts everything in motion as far as throwing him out.
That's one of the key factors in I love talking about Sammy and not Logan to start the show, by the way. take that, Logan. We'll get to him.
Sammy, I can't stand that guy.
well, let's just make for a fun conversation in a few minutes. You're not alone. So Sammy, especially among pro wrestling fans, but maybe the world. So staying focused here, because it's easy to get distracted by Logan's smirks. Sammy and Kevin Owens as a tag team is great, and I want them to do that, and I think it'll be really good. But I think KO and Sammy both deserve top singles pushes. I love Sammy. He's one of my favorites to watch in any capacity, and has been for a very long time. So I'm excited about the idea that he can end up being a top tier babyface. When he got called up to the main roster, it was around the time that Daniel Bryan then was out with the retirement or the neck injuries, or I'm trying to remember exactly the timeline, but I was like, Sammy has a chance to fill that spot. And if he ends up there, he's going to end up a different character than I imagined and taking a completely unconventional route to get there. And he's older, it's not like you're going to build around him for 12 years, but I think you can get some years with him as a crazy over babyface that fans pay to see and love chanting for. He's just so good in the ring, and he's so talented. And it, like you said, at some point, Jay's going to have enough, and he's going to snap. And, yeah, Roman's going to choose family. But what I don't want is and I said, they set this up for Sammy to screw up. I hope Sammy turns, not he gets kicked out. And so if that's the moment that Jay snaps, I want it to be when Sammy grows a spine. I think he has one now to a degree, but when he kind of smartens up that he doesn't need the approval of the bloodline and he's had enough of Jay and he's tired of Roman siding with Jay, because too many people turn because bad guys turn on them. And so then they're left being a babyface. That happened famously with Seth, with the Authority. I want Sammy to be the one who breaks off from them. And I think Jay, of course, looks like he's going to be the impetus and the instigator and the initiator, copyright Paul Heyman, when that happens.
Yeah, I did not even think about that possibility, because a few years ago, Sammy was just such a hated heel, and he was so obnoxious, and with that long, greasy hair and just obnoxious personality coming out dancing to his music, I was like, this guy's going to be a heel forever. He used to be such an underdog babyface in NXT, and everybody loved him. But you're right. I think he can get back to that place where he's the Daniel Bryan-esque underdog that's crazy over. And you're right. I think he would be he'd be a good one-off challenger to Roman. Of course, Roman would still get the victory, maybe Royal Rumble, maybe the February pay-per-view, something like that. And he just gets that almost so close moment of maybe we think he can dethrone Roman Reigns, but Roman Reigns gets him in the end. But yeah, he definitely could take it far with the new underdog babyface. We'll go with the renewing of his underdog babyface character.
Yeah, yeah. And, when the announcers are just, drawing attention to the fact that Sammy is just helping the bloodline on a hot streak, you also wonder how Roman's going to feel about, like Solo Sikoa and the Usos, anyone needing his help or wanting his help. Like, Roman wants Sammy to be there to provide service, but is there a point where it seems like Sammy starts realizing or Roman thinks Sammy is thinking he's responsible for their success? I mean, there's so many directions that they can go with this. I'm also intrigued, and this isn't unrelated to Sammy, but it's not only Sammy based, is Solo Sikoa. He walks in and he's choosing Sammy over his brothers. And is Solo showing that he's more of a babyface than a heel at this point, or is he a heel who wants the best cheater, the most effective cheater at ringside to help him? And he's, you'd be reading too much into it to say otherwise, because we're very early in his main roster run.
Yes, I think it's the latter. I think he just wants the most effective cheater that's going to help him.
Yeah.
He just said, Jay, you were off the mark earlier today. I need Sammy. So it was just kind of like, hey, nothing personal. It's just business. We need to get the best guy out there for the team, and we just have to do what needs to be done. No hard feelings. Just, you know, just take it like this, and maybe next week it'll be your week. But yeah, I think it's the latter for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like when the NBA head coach looks down the bench and he points at one player, but you can see the other player wanted to be called. And so the one guy gets up and the other one kind of hangs his head or you know, sneers a little bit. You get a little bit of that going on with Solo. But, man, with the family connection and the Usos' history compared to Sammy, you know, they're not going to be happy about that. And so does Jay whine to Roman? And then Roman says, hey, Jay, you know, Sammy's been effective. No, yep. You know, not know your role, but like, yeah. You know.
Oh, that would be perfect right now. Know your role, Sammy. That don't read into that. Nothing's going to come of that.
Yeah. And that could be foreshadowing something else.
Exactly.
I'd love for Sammy to be the one who picks up the phone and calls Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, my God. That would be awesome. I didn't even think about that.
That's what I mean about this. The bloodline is back. Yeah, there's so many fun talking points going on right now with that group. Okay, so let's pause and let's introduce our show and let's introduce ourselves. We've got a new co-host today. And give out the phone numbers and emails so we can bring our listeners' opinions and questions and thoughts into the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, September 16th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, pwtorch.com/papercopy, if you want to look forward to going to your mailbox and settle in with paper instead of a screen and catch up on a week's worth of happenings. And also pwtorch.com. And I also host a variety of websites, including these post shows, along with the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Last night, we put up our weekly flagship. Rich Fan was back as co-host of that show. We talked a lot about AEW turmoil and drama and the future of CM Punk, the future of the Bucks. I passed along the latest that I had been hearing about that situation. And we also talked WWE quite a bit too. So check that out if you haven't yet. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to both this, the Red Logo Show, and also the Blue Logo Show that will pop up. That's our post shows and our podcasts. And while you're at it, search PW Torch and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast now. And this is big. Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure has moved from a VIP exclusive show to now being offered Saturday nights on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. VIP members will still most often get early access to the show early Saturday afternoon. But by Saturday night, everybody gets to listen. And it is a WWE-centric show. And Nick and Tom are fantastic. I give them a hard time. But their chemistry is even if you didn't know wrestling, you'd still want to listen to them just go back and forth. But knowing wrestling, and if you're interested in some really smart takes and strong opinions, by the way, they're not shy. There's not a lot of wishy-washiness by either of them in their opinions. And they often disagree and talk it through. It's worth listening to. So search PW Torch and subscribe free to the PW Torch Daily Cast. And tomorrow night, Saturday night, or for most of you tonight, by the time you download this, you can hear their take on SmackDown and the Logan Paul situation with Crown Jewel and more. But first things first, we've got tonight's show to cover, and we have a new voice here in the co-host chair, Danny Doucette. Did I get that right?
Yes. You got it right.
I paused. Yeah, I was like, I was overthinking it earlier.
You hit a little bit late.
I did. I was overthinking it earlier, and then we talked before, and I'm like, I think it's just how it sounds, but, you know, sometimes I want to get it right, so I paused, you know, make sure I got it right. I didn't have the confidence I should have. You are our old perspective TV reporter at pwtorch.com covering Raw. How long have you been doing that now?
Since June. I remember it was the first show after Hell in a Cell when – Cody's last appearance, at least in the arena, last appearance. I remember that was the Raw.
Yeah. So if you've done that for a few months, you do a great job of that, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You took to our stringent format quickly, which I always appreciate. I like to serve the readers an organized, well-edited report whenever possible. I mean, obviously at that pace, and people know with mine too, there's going to be typos and, you know, mixing up names and stuff that I don't catch till later, but yeah, you do a great job with that, and your analysis is really sharp. So it's great to finally bring you on here, and we get to talk SmackDown instead of Raw, and get your opinion and chat during the show here. So welcome.
Thank you so much. It's an honor. I'm a longtime PW Torch listener. It's so surreal to be here on the show. I've been listening for years now, so it's just indescribable. It's crazy.
Well, that's awesome. I appreciate it. So tell people a little bit about yourself, a little bit about who you are, and, you know, whatever you want to share, but mostly, you know, like your history as a pro wrestling fan too, or if you have a couple other hobbies, and if there's any social media that you want to plug. Some do, some don't.
So I'm pretty inactive on social media. I do have a Twitter that I set up around the time of starting the All Perspective Reports that I just have in case anybody wants to contact me. Sure. I mean, I check it, but it's a D Doucette 214. It's a Danny Doucette. You should be able to find me. I'm the one with no profile picture, so should be pretty easy to find. But as a wrestling fan, I've been a wrestling fan since about 1996. I remember right after WrestleMania 12, a Bret the Hitman Hart action figure in a drugstore was the thing that sparked my interest in wrestling. So that was the journey and the start of that journey into pro wrestling. And I've been a fan ever since, off and on, of course, a little bit of lapses of the fandom here and there, but pretty consistent. Got teased for a lot of my family, but I stayed the course. And
good for you.
And I'm here today, and I'm glad I stuck around as long as I did. And I'm writing about wrestling, which I never thought I would ever get a chance to do. So thank you so much, Wade, for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, so far so good talking with you here on the show. You got a great, great mic setup and great enthusiasm. And I know from your reports, you got a sharp mind for wrestling. So look forward to talking about the other things on SmackDown tonight. Oh, by the way, speaking of Twitter, you can follow me at The Wade Keller, pro wrestling and other stuff. You can follow our brand for Strictly Pro Wrestling at PW Torch. And I hope you're checking out our website, pwtorch.com, and our YouTube channel at youtube.com/pwtorch. Smash the subscribe button, leave some comments, and watch our videos. All right. If you want to join the show, our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard. That means you want to be on the show. You can call in and just listen and not push 1, too, if that's more convenient than streaming it. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's get rolling with calls, and we'll begin with Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, good to hear from you again. What's on your mind tonight?
How you guys doing tonight?
Good.
How you doing,
good.
Danny? Never talked
good.
To you before.
Good, good. Thank you. Thank you. Good.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. I thought it was a solid show. You know, a lot of solid matches. I don't think a lot of people are going to like Logan Paul versus Reigns. I assume that's the match they're going to do at Crown Jewel. I'll be intrigued just to see how, you know, they pair up in a match and how they work together and all that. So I'll be interested. I don't want Logan Paul to win the belt. You know, I assume it's going to be for the title. You know, right? I mean, is that where the plan is? I'm pretty sure it would be.
I mean, I'm not saying it won't be, but it's ridiculous if it is.
That's what my
friend
said,
should,
exactly.
Yeah, you should have to be more than famous to walk into WWE and get a title shot. WWE portrays title opportunities as things you earn through a grueling Money in the Bank match, which gets you the advantage of being able to cash in the briefcase, or the Royal Rumble, which gets you the advantage of getting to, quote, main event WrestleMania, or, you know, winning a Fatal 4-Way match or something like the tag titles tonight. But Logan does not have an impressive enough record to just challenge Roman and suddenly have the higher-ups, as Corey Graves referred to them, give a title shot to Logan. So I hope they don't do that. However, Saudi Arabia has a lot of money, and they pay a lot of money, and I suspect they don't just want Logan Paul and Roman Reigns. They want it to be a championship match. So my hunch is it will be. I don't know if there's been any solid reporting or WWE's made any announcements as far as that goes, but I suspect we'll get that news tomorrow at the press conference. Danny, what do you think?
I don't know if you could hear my eyes rolling, but yeah, that's my reaction
could.
To.
I could. I didn't know what that noise was, but now I know.
That's my reaction to Logan Paul getting the title shot. Again, like you said, I would not be surprised if they did it just because they want the headlines and they want the publicity for Logan Paul getting the WWE title shot, but it would be absolutely ridiculous. They should not do it. You can have him in the corner of someone getting a title shot. Don't know who. Could be Ricochet. Could be anybody else that's an actual active wrestler full-time, but not Logan Paul. He's not qualified in any sense. He's got two wins, one as a tag team, one against The Miz. He's not qualified to be a title contender, just plain and simple. I can't stand the guy, for one. he's good in the ring as far as what we've seen, but he should not be anywhere near a title match at this time.
The thing with Logan is he wants to be, you know, a good guy, a babyface. But in wrestling, he still comes across as an outsider trying to be accepted. And it just sort of is obvious that that's what he wants. But, you know, it's like rock. You know, you can be a popular rock band, but you get usually booed if you're performing because people want to see wrestling at wrestling shows. And I think people want to see wrestlers who they believe got to WWE the way almost everybody else on the roster did. You know, Ronda Rousey didn't, but, you know, she won some legit fights in some impressive fashion in MMA. That's a hell of a journey. You know, Brock took, you know, was an NCAA heavyweight wrestling champion and had that credentials to kind of move up through the system quickly. Gable Steveson, you know, may or may not make it as a pro wrestler, but he's going to be given a chance to leapfrog some people. Oh yeah. But you know, he's got some credentials too. Logan Paul's credentials are more controversial because he comes across as sort of a new era reality star having weird, not clear-cut sports-like fights. People who like him, I think, you know, and the announcers talk about it, respect his toughness and his athleticism. But the wrestling fans, I think, look at him and see him as an interloper. They're just like, you don't really belong here. You haven't earned it. And you walked onto the stage like we should all know who you are. And as much as the announcers say, you know, it almost was comical the way they talked about him at the beginning of the show. They made him sound like, you know, it was the most famous person in the world walking into that ring. And everybody follows him on social media and is concerned about his daily life. And I don't care. And I don't know many people who care. You can be wildly famous on social media and still be unknown to a lot of other people. And so I guess, Danny, I want to ask you, and then I'll actually throw it to Mike for the same question, is what kind of knowledge base of Logan Paul did you have before this, and what was your opinion of him, if any, before he got to WWE?
I knew his name. I got him confused with his brother. I didn't know who Logan – I knew Logan and Jake Paul, but I couldn't pick him out of a lineup. Yeah, I heard about the boxing match with Floyd Mayweather, which is proof, ladies and gentlemen, that in boxing, like in wrestling, you can get over by just lasting in a match with a superior opponent. You don't even have to win. They just tout that constantly. So that's a lesson for all the bookers in WWE. You can get people over by just rubbing shoulders with somebody of a higher caliber. But Logan Paul, yeah, and when he first came on Raw a couple months back, they were saying impulsive TV. Like, I didn't know what that was. I was like, what is that? I assumed it was a podcast or YouTube show. I had heard about only thing I heard about them in regards to controversy and certain YouTube videos that were inappropriate that they had out there and things like that. And that was all I knew. And they were just a couple of obnoxious frat boy type guys. So that's the only thing I knew about them at all.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, that's not too different than my knowledge. I mean, I peripherally knew of them, but it, you know, I had to educate myself on them pretty quickly once, you know, Logan showed up and became a prominent part of a big show. Mike, your opinion on him before WWE and now since he's been in WWE?
I just know him from WWE and that's it. Before WWE, yeah. I had no idea who that was. I have no clue who that was.
And
I just know him. I know he's good in the ring.
he's super impressive for a someone who has trained as a hobby. But, you know, Dominic Mysterio takes some heat, you know, for not going through developmental and taking a traditional path. It's like, yeah, but, you know, you grew up in the wrestling business and your dad is a legend. And, you know, it can backfire if you're not good. But if you're good, I think people are more willing to accept that, especially if you do a little heel run to kind of let people get their booing of you out of their system. With Logan, he's just put his foot in his mouth a few times. You know, I trained so hard. Okay, well, go train hard at the Performance Center with all these other people who are good athletes who want to be accepted and survive and thrive on the main roster. Go work some NXT matches. Go on some road trips. You know, be humble. You know, go play in the minors like Michael Jordan. You know, he was famous in one area, but he didn't just drop onto a major league team. I think he's got that baggage. But then you add to it his facial expressions and just sort of the vibe he gives off. And, you know, it's an uphill battle. There's a real headwind getting him over as a babyface. And that when you do that, and we've seen it with other people, whether it's Roman or Cody, wrestlers who are getting the opposite reaction that the promotion is desiring and framing can mess up other things. It has a cascade effect. And now you're going to have a situation where, probably not with the Saudi Arabia crowd, but all the hype leading up to it, I mean, I think fans are going to be cheering Roman. They're already cheering Sammy. It's going to be a challenge. And I'm up for seeing how Paul Heyman, because, you know, he's going to be a company guy and try to get people to boo Roman and cheer Logan, I assume. And so we'll see what kind of magic he can work. But it's a big match to put on Crown Jewel in the sense that, you know, the Saudis really want to have the novelty matches and, you know, something that's special. And this does feel special, and the press conference will probably get a lot of mainstream and social media publicity. But I don't know how actual wrestling fans are going to react to this. Mike, I'll throw it back to you if you want to follow up on that or anything else.
Oh, yeah, just like my friend said, you know, it'll sell tickets. But outside of that, you know, I think a lot of people just don't have any interest really in that match. I mean, once the match starts, I'll enjoy it. I know they'll have good action and all that, and they'll put on a good match. But, like, I'm not going to be, like, super excited going in. And then some people,
yeah,
that's how they are. Like, I got a friend, you know, he's not happy with the Triple H era because he says he doesn't watch NXT. And all these people that they're bringing in, he says that he feels like WWE now is just like one big indie show. And he's not interested, he said, because he really doesn't know who Killer Cross is. He really doesn't know who Io Shirai is. Yeah, he just doesn't know about these people, so he's not interested in Raw. I watch NXT, so
yeah,
I love Io Shirai and all them. So I'm.
Well, let me jump in, Mike. I want to jump in here and throw it to Danny on this. Has Paul Levesque done a good enough job introducing the new talent? Like, Mike's friend is like, I don't know who these people are. Well, you know, there's always new wrestlers showing up. You're always going to have a rotation of some people leaving and new people coming onto the roster. Is there something about what Paul Levesque has done in terms of how he's brought up, you know, Karrion Kross and Io Sky? Who else is on the list who he's brought up? I guess Hit Row.
Solo.
Solo Sikoa now.
Ciampa. Well, Ciampa was there before.
Yeah, what happened to him? Dexter, there you go. Dexter, yeah.
Dexter,
yeah. So, do you think that's a understandable point of view, a fair point of view, Danny?
Yes, I think so. To me, I knew a lot of these people, so it was just like, oh, hey, Johnny Gargano's here, and oh, hey, Dexter Lumis, I kind of was familiar with him. There he goes. But I can see from outside perspective how someone will be like, who's this guy? It's just kind of like, oh, so-and-so's here. Yay. And you're supposed to be clued in. If you don't know who it is, you're just like, I don't know who this person is, but okay, I guess I'm supposed to be excited for him. It's kind of like you say, Wade, about the whole secret handshake club. It's like, ooh, it's so-and-so, and they're so great. And you see people online talking about them, and it's like, well, I don't know who that is, so why should I be excited? I kind of don't like this person because everybody else likes them, and I don't know who they are. They didn't. I remember a few years ago when they were bringing up EC3 and a couple of other folks that ended up unfortunately flopping, but at least they had little video packages for them before they brought them up. So it was kind of to catch you up to speed about who they were. They haven't done that for any of these people. So I can definitely see how his friend is kind of turned off by it.
Mike, what else have you got for us?
I want to talk about the Rousey-Liv confrontation that we had.
Yeah, for sure.
I enjoyed that. I think Liv sounded different. And, you know, I think she's been acting different the past few weeks. I think tonight she sounded heelish. I think she's coming off as a heel. I think she sounds cocky, and I like that. I hope it is leading to a heel turn. I don't know if it's just, you know, they're teasing us with that, or she is going to turn heel, but I'm liking this out of Liv. I like this confidence and cockiness. Do you guys agree? And you think it's good for Liv if she goes heel? I think it would be really good for her. And how do you think she sounded tonight? I think she sounded good.
Yeah, I do not have trust in this storyline or Liv's acting or how she's being produced to – I don't have the confidence to think she comes across as to us as they're intending. I think one of the weaknesses with Liv is, and it's tough to hear this if you're her, I would think, but I just still don't know who she is. I feel like she's always trying to be something that isn't herself, and I don't know that she even knows what she wants her character to be, but she's just trying all these things. You know, it's like one thing after another just feels a little bit different. Like, oh, I'm going to try to be a sex symbol, or I'm going to try to be the underdog, the scrappy underdog, or, you know, it's just, she's been through all these personas and now she's putting on this I beat you twice demeanor, but like they weren't good, impressive wins, but she's acting like they were. So if you're up to speed on how she won those matches, you're looking at her just shaking your head going, you know, maybe you ought to beat her fair and square without controversy before carrying yourself like that. So if your goal is to be a babyface, it'd be much better. And I'm not saying it is, but if it was, she should come out and go, hey, Rhonda, I got two wins and I'm super proud of it. I never thought I'd be the only person in the world who had two wins over Ronda Rousey years ago. I absolutely would not have believed that could be the case. But I'm starting to believe more in myself. But I understand those two wins have asterisks next to them. You didn't beat me right away. I'm proud of that. I survived. I'm starting to believe in myself. I've managed to find ways to beat you twice, but I want to beat you straight up. And I don't want anyone to go, yeah, but except for this or that. And I'm looking forward to that opportunity. To me, that's much more of a babyface. That it's a babyface promo that fits her persona. It's a good fit for her if as a babyface persona. However, it might be obvious now to everybody, and I, like I said, I'm just not confident. This isn't just because it's Rhonda, and Rhonda's awkward too. But if she is trying to go heel, then that's good. But I'm still not sure once she gets past this if she's going to be a good heel either, because I kind of think what I just said is more what they should be doing with her. And I don't know that it's going to work as a heel either, unless the goal is just have her be a heel going into the match, have Rhonda crush her, and then move Liv down to being a mid-card heel. And maybe that will work. So I'm hesitant to be confident what they're doing, and I'm hesitant to be excited by what they're doing, unless the idea is we tried with Liv. She's, you know, we want her on the roster, but she's being pushed above her competency, both in the ring and on the microphone. So let's just position Rhonda to get cheered. Let's have Liv be a little heelish, and we'll have Rhonda win and move on. If that's the case, that's probably the best route based on, you know, what Paul Levesque sort of inherited from this. Danny, what do you think?
That was going to be my exact takeaway from this is they need to just have Rhonda squash her, take the belt, never put Liv, at least for time being, back near the SmackDown Women's title. It's done. It's a wrap. This whole run has messed her up. She was the natural, likable baby face, and now this has totally killed that. I noted that she was acting heelish. She was in a skybox last week or empty set of arena chairs. I don't even know. It didn't even really look like a skybox, but whatever. But Yeah, she's doing the whole cocky thing, and she was dressed like she was still in that tag team with Rhea Ripley, so I don't know what that was all about. And she had that crazy eye makeup. Yeah, she's just all over the place. Just they need to get the title off her, back on to Ronda, and move on.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, so Mike, back to you. Okay, yep.
But if she is, like, if she's meant to be a heel, like, do you think she did a good job, though, like last week and this week? Like, I'd rather her. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
my answer to that, Mike, is tonight.
Yes, that she. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, the answer is she did a good job tonight if the goal is to be a heel. But I would add to it,
right.
I don't think that's ultimately the best role for her, even if I think she did a good job last week and this week at portraying that. I'm leaning towards that. It might seem like I'm being more hesitant or gun-shy than I should to just embrace the idea that, yeah, they're trying to have her be a heel. But I think she's come across in a way that is – I've interpreted her actions wrong before just based on what she was going for versus what actually came across. But even if she's good at being a heel last week and this week, I don't think she's a main event heel. And I still think her natural role should be a scrappy underdog who, by the way, is not overpushed into a main event spot. So just because she might be good at being a heel right now doesn't mean I think she's a main event heel or that heel is the best role for her. So that's sort of my asterisk before I get gush about her heel coming across as a heel. And I want to say this, just because I have an opinion on that doesn't mean I don't hope I'm wrong. Like, I hope she has great matches, and if the goal is for her to be heel, I hope she's the next breakout heel for WWE. I love to be surprised in that way, but I'm not saying I'm not going to put my money down on that right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if she's going to turn heel, I think she's probably going to lose the belt. You know, I think if they do want to turn her heel, she's going to lose the belt.
Yeah.
But I think the best bet, you know, because if she stays on SmackDown, if she loses the title, I feel like she's going to get lost in the shuffle. So I feel like, I mean, the draft's coming up soon, so move her over to Raw and put her in the Judgment Day somehow. And then she can work with Ripley and Priest, they can work with her, and, you know, they can perhaps bring aggression out of her and all that. And I think with time, I think she would get better and better and better as a heel and come out with aggression and just, like, she would come out with rage. I could see that with her. So that, I think that would be best for her, like something like the Judgment
Day,
if she loses the title, you know, instead of just having her on SmackDown and getting lost there, you know.
Anything else, Mike?
Yeah, but about damage control, how do you guys feel about how Bayley performed in the ring? I think she did good. It was a good match, and I disagree, like what the guy said on the Raw post show, or it was either a caller, or maybe it was Tom, that Io is not looking as good in the ring. I think we got to see more of Io in the ring before we can say that, you know, because Io is one of the best wrestlers in the world. Period. I think. So I got to see more of her before I could say that she don't look as good now in the ring. I haven't noticed any ring rust or anything like that in her.
Sure.
So what do you guys think?
Okay, so, yeah, let me throw to Danny on that. Both Bayley's performance tonight and just kind of overall Io Sky so far.
Io Sky, I feel like she hasn't really got a chance to showcase. She still seems like she could still go, but I feel like she hasn't got enough time to really break out or have a good singles match, a good long singles match aside from Bianca Belair a couple of weeks ago. But I think she could still go. I think she's been kind of holding back, if anything. I don't think she's lost any of her steps, anything like that. She just needs that right opponent and that right situation to showcase what she can do. I think she's just holding back and kind of waiting for that time. But as far as Bayley, she has looked lost and just looked rusty and just she has not looked like herself ever since she came back. On the mic is just cheap heat, which is fine. I got no problem with cheap heat, but it's just kind of – it's not on the level that she was in the Golden Role Models with Sasha. She was on a whole other level then. Now it's just – she seems a little nervous. And in the ring, she just – the two matches she's had since she's been back, well, aside from the six-woman tag – she's looked really rusty and just a step behind, and I have not been impressed with her at all. Her first match back, I remember, against Aaliyah, she looked like her facial expression just looked down, like she didn't want to be there. I don't know if that was a part of the storyline, but it didn't seem to be. But she looked like she just did not want to be there. She looked nervous. She looked like she was didn't want to get in the ring. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but that's my takeaway on Bayley ever since she came back to the ring.
Tonight, I thought she looked. I thought she looked better tonight. But I'm watching her now with her mic work. I mean, because first of all, there was just it's a 6-minute match. There was a lot of interference and stuff, and Bayley just running around ringside and all that. But I thought she was just fine in the ring. And so hopefully she can build on that, and it's not a shock that she might have some ring rust on the microphone. Like when she's like, ding dong, I'm your role model. It was almost like she's like, oh, I'll just roll through my greatest hits. I'm not getting the sense, and this is totally a guess, but it's not a good thing to think, that she's just not like super motivated right now. Like she's kind of coming across like, maybe I'm, good enough to kind of go through the motions and I've paid my dues, but I'm, not trying to reinvent myself in any kind of way that shows that she's just thinking about her promos and her character, 7 days a week, before she gets to TV and is just full of ideas. It's also possible she's full of ideas and really motivated, and the writers and Paula Beck are like, nope, do this. That's where I'm trying to be fair to her. But what we're seeing from her just sort of feels like a half-hearted best of with her. I'm fine that she's leading a faction. I think that's good. I think it's helping elevate Dakota and Io quickly to being a little bit more relevant. So I find myself not as down on Bayley as I think most are, but I definitely see what they're saying. But I'm more kind of taking a wait-and-see attitude and hoping that a singles feud with Bayley against a sharp veteran on the microphone brings something more out in her. I guess that's kind of where I stand right now. Mike, I want to get to the calls, but I appreciate all the topics you brought up today.
Yeah, thanks. No problem, guys. Have a
Absolutely.
Great night.
All right. Yep, you
thanks,
too. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Always good hearing from Mike in Atlantic City. Let's go to Brad in Delaware next. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
It's actually Matt from Delaware.
Oh, hey. Oh, what did I say?
I said Brad.
Oh, Brad from New York's after you. So, sorry. I got Matt from Delaware. Brad from New York, you're next.
He's actually a good friend of mine anyway, so I'm not insulted. It's okay. But
cool.
LA Knight, I'm sorry, Maximum Male Models, Max Dupree referenced they were very close to Los Angeles or LA or whatever. Do you think that's some sort of hint that maybe his LA Knight character is coming back sometime soon? Because I heard some sort of rumors about that, and it seemed kind of conspicuous that he would include that in his promo.
Just the fact he included they're near L.A.?
Yeah, he just sort of emphasized
yeah.
L.A. very much and sort of yeah. looked around for a second,
yeah.
and then moved on with it.
So what I would say is I think it's a natural thing to say, even if his character had never been L.A. Knight, if you're portraying that you're heading up a model agency, it makes sense you would say, hey, we're close to L.A. This is, this is where we feel home is. It feels like something you might say anyway. Now, that's I think he probably leaned into it a little bit because of the backstory with that being his name in NXT. But I would be hesitant to read too much into it. I think it would actually be more awkward and troubled than beneficial at this point to change his name back, because it's like he's got a sister, Maxine. His name is Max, which is weird. If, parents, by the way, don't name your kids Max and Maxine. That's too close. But it would be weird, for him to become L.A. Knight or L.A. Dupree. I don't know. So I guess we're just I think they should just stick with Max Dupree and enroll with it. What do you think, Danny?
Yeah, I did catch that about him leaning into L.A. I'm not super familiar with his work in NXT, but I did know he went under the name L.A. Knight. And I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority here, but I actually thought that segment was pretty funny with the Maximum Male Models and their whole back-to-school outfits and just getting run over by Strowman. I got a pretty good chuckle out of that. So I don't know if you guys did as well.
The only thing I didn't like, but it might have been a feature, not a flaw in their eyes, is when Mansoor got all wide-eyed when Bronze Music played, he didn't turn around. And I know they wanted them to get hit from behind. And I guess the story is he sort of cartoonishly got frozen in fear. But if you hear music and you're scared and you go wide-eyed and you just sort of strike this cartoonish pose, it sort of takes me out of it. It just feels a little too cartoonish that he didn't, like, turn around or hear him coming. If somebody's about to charge at me, a Braun Strowman size from behind, I'm not going to just stand there and let him hit me from behind. And so he clearly knew what was coming and didn't react. They went for the, you know, slapstick facial expression over realism, but I would have rather had them just turn around and take the clotheslines head on and just turn at the last second and not really have any defense rather than go for the cartoon effect. So, like I said, they probably think that's more a feature than a flaw because that's what they were going for. That tone doesn't work for me. Danny, what do you think?
I think their clothes were probably so tight they probably couldn't move in time, so I guess that's what froze them, because those are some very tight outfits that they were wearing.
They were, yeah.
So we'll just go with that. Yeah, I did think it was pretty cartoonish. It looked like Daffy Duck or Bugs Bunny or something
that,
one of those cartoons back in the day, and they should have just held up a sign that said, uh-oh, and then got hit from behind.
Yeah,
it would all been the same. So
we can bring back words on the screen, big words on the screen from like whatever that was 6 years ago.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I shouldn't bring
Boing or Zing or whatever it was. I don't even remember, but
I've brought it back into existence by mentioning it, and now if it's brought back, it'll be my fault, and I feel
good. At least it's not 2 out of 3 falls matches for every match.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Matt, back to you.
Yeah, I also with that segment, the way that Braun came in and ran in on Maximum Male Models, I feel like that, rather than have him run in on the 8 guys in the tag match on Raw a couple weeks ago, this is the way they should have brought him back. Come in and destroy Maximum Male Models, and, you know, a sort of a disposable tag team, then run through Alpha Academy and Montez Ford and everybody else in that match. So I feel like they got it right this time, you know, a couple weeks too late.
This was one of my specific suggestions, and I think it would have been anybody's idea if anyone put thought into it. Have him beat up the Maximum ML Models, not interrupt a tag match, and toss around some, you know, legit tag teams and then make it seem like a tag team contendership match doesn't even matter as much as a returning monster. So not to go down that road again of criticizing it, but this was the right thing to do. And you're right. It was, I wouldn't say it's 2 weeks too late. I mean, I would say better late than never, but yeah, I wish they hadn't done what they did with him initially.
Yeah. And then with the 4-way tag match at that main event tonight, originally last week, they had advertised the same 4 teams that did the Fatal 4-Way on Raw, and obviously it was different tonight. Lotharios weren't in it. Hit Row was in it, and Imperium was in it, which I think was – and the Brawling Brutes were in it with the New Day. I thought it was a good match. I thought it was interesting how, you know, Ridge made that blind tag and got in there and, you know, took over after Imperium hit the finish. So it definitely – after the Usos probably inevitably defeat them, it gives more of a more substance to the feud between the Brawling Brutes and Imperium. But I noticed, you know, we've all noticed, I guess, the last 2 weeks, Top Dollar keeps teasing this top rope splash, being a big man like that. You think we're going to see him hit that? Because I've heard he's pretty athletic and can get that top rope over-the-top splash where he wipes everybody out front. And I thought we were going to get it tonight, but then Vinci came in and chop-blocked him. But
I mean, I think it's cool to build up a big spot and not just make it seem like it's you know, easy to hit and you can always hit it. So if he can pull it off and he's going to try to tease it and build up to it, I mean, I think that's a fine way to introduce the spot. If the Brawling Brutes are – I was going to say, if they're baby faces, having them win by kind of stealing a pin feels a little rough. But at the same time, it's just like those are the rules of the match, and everybody's playing by those rules. And I don't think it's – none of the announcers aren't framing it as like, wow, you should win with more honor. It's just like, no, it's a chaos of of a Fatal 4-Way Tag Match, and that, you know, it's strategically, if you can make that happen, make it happen. I think it's a fresh matchup. I was, you know, I wasn't groaning, but I was sort of like not excited if New Day won and they were just going to do another, you know, TV match with them. Just, you know, because then it would feel like the match was just the backdrop for some other story that they wanted to tell, maybe with Sammy or something. So it should be a good match next week. You know, Paul Levesque's been giving time to good matchups, and I think it's a good matchup for them. I don't expect them to win the belts. What do you think, Danny?
Yeah, as far as Top Dollar and the over rope splash, that should be good. But everybody does dives now. I'm sick of seeing it. It's always cool when a big man does it though, like Keith Lee or Undertaker, I guess. But I really wish they would just stop the dives and everybody grabbing each other and moving in the position. I can't stand that. That's one of my biggest pet peeves. But as far as the Brawling Brutes and the Usos, it should be a nice hard-hitting match. Expected the Usos to retain, of course. It's just kind of going to be a one-off match. I mean, it should be a good match, but I don't think it's anything we'll remember past next week. So.
Yep. And you know I'm with you on those dives. all right, Matt, back to you for anything else you want to bring up before we move to your friend Brad.
Well, yeah, I'd agree with the dives are overdone.
And Matt, by the way, any time you use now, you're eating into Brad's time. I just want to create some trouble.
All right, well, hey, we'll deal
but
with that.
But take all the time
off,
you need.
With the splash thing, I agree with you guys. It's done. Everybody's got to do it over, you know, every tag match, every multiple person match we're seeing, you know, splash over the top rope, go to commercial. It's very overdone. You know, it's just so convenient that everybody's out there out front to catch him. But I do like the way that they're not just going right to it with him, because I've seen him do it on the indies. He is a bigger guy. And he last week he had Maxine get in his way. This week he got cut off trying to do it. But regardless, moving on from that, I have not been impressed at all with Damage Control Faction. To me, it's gone downhill ever since they were introduced at SummerSlam. I was excited to see Bayley back, excited to see new faces. And to me, it's not EO that's the problem. EO, I think, aside from the fact that, you know, she's not necessarily great on the microphone, to me, I feel like Dakota Kai is shaking off some serious ring rust. And Bayley just doesn't feel natural with her promos. She almost feels like everybody feels like right now they're much less scripted than they were under Vince. And Bayley almost feels like somebody that needs to be scripted. And I don't know if you guys catch the same thing with Bayley and with Dakota's ring work.
Danny, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. It's gone downhill since they debuted. It was past the initial excitement at SummerSlam. I feel like the tag title win kind of brought back a little more excitement, but so I'm hoping that restores the initial feeling we had about them. But yeah, their promos just feel wooden. It just feels like the same. We're gonna take over. We're gonna control the women's division. Well, okay, great. What else?
Be entertaining, have some wit, be sinister, be more threatening. It just, again, it feels kind of, you know, derivative wrestling promo phoned in. And I don't watch their promos and think, man, they've been texting and talking all week coming up with, you know, how they want to come across. It kind of feels like they show up and they're handed a couple bullet points or maybe even just average script, and they just go out and they just do it and then move on, you know, and then I'm not saying that I have any knowledge that Bayley's just phoning it in, because that's not fair. She's trying hard and just not clicking, and she's, you know, losing sleep over it. She might be, but I'm saying the impression is not a lot of thought goes into this. And, you know, she seems just sort of like, you know, comes across as just satisfied with herself. But again, she's a heel. She should come across as satisfied with herself. I'm looking for more from them. They haven't had great opponents yet. So I'm still not, I think some people are writing them off and you know, really down on them. And I want a little bit bigger sample size, but, you know, I mean, TikTok, I mean, at some point you got to come through with something where people are like, okay, that's what we've been waiting for, either in the ring or on the mic. So Hopefully we get that soon. Matt, any closing words?
Yeah, my final thoughts are just that Liv Morgan, I feel like she doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know what she wants to be, and that's how she's coming across to me. Every week it's something different. That one, but just as you were saying earlier, it's like she's an underdog one week, then she's the girl who tried so hard from New Jersey that whatever, and now she's the one who legitimately beat Ronda Rousey twice and was the only person to ever do that. Well, she didn't really legitimately do anything because she cashed in a Money in the Bank and took advantage of a wounded Rousey, and then she was tapping out during the other pin. And I just really hope that Rousey, I'll be at Extreme Rules, and I hope I get to witness Rousey, you know, take the belt off of her, and they keep Liv Morgan as far away from the title team as they possibly can after that.
Well, I'll say Liv is distracting me from Rousey's awkwardness in terms of getting her character across. The shot of Ronda chatting with Kayla Braxton, and it's like she's smiling. It's like her body language is like, I am supposed to be having a good time talking with Kayla, so this is how my face would look if I am supposed to be having a good time chatting with her. And I'm very casual in my chatting with her, therefore, I will hold this posture. It feels very put on.
Oh, the Tom Phillips conundrum, huh?
Yeah. But it's better than having her live on television just get frustrated and completely, you know, just let go of all the things that she's been coached to do or is trying to do. When they put her in a pre-recorded situation, there's more control. But, I mean, you know, Ronda's better as a heel and Liv's better as a babyface, but both of the characters are kind of messed up right now. And I think, you know, Ronda wants to be a babyface, obviously, kind of like Logan Paul. Anyway, Matt, thanks for the topic. Thanks for the call.
All right, thank you. Go VIP, and you guys have a good night.
Awesome. Right, thanks, Matt.
Too. Thanks, Matt.
All right, up next is Brad in New York and then Evan in Chicago. Hold tight. We'll get to you after that. Brad, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Danny. How you guys doing?
Good. Good to talk to you.
Good. Good. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Yeah, so Matt is actually the one who introduced me to your show, so I got to give him big credit, and he can go on as long as he wants because to take time from me because he –
Brad, unfortunately, he brought up two more topics. He did eat up all the time except for what you've had so far. So we do have to let you go. I warned Matt.
Have a good night, guys. Have a good night. Thanks for the time.
All right, I'll change. I'll lead into Evan's time. Evan, shorten your opening topic, and then we'll give Brad some time. Evan, you got 20 seconds to get to your point before we respond. So now we're putting time limits on people. Go ahead, Brad.
There we go. Evan, you're screwed. Sorry, man. So really quick. I was kind of surprised that they were – I was thinking that NXT North American Championship was just going to become another WWE title. And I was surprised that, you know, how much they were emphasizing it's the NXT North American Championship. This is the NXT North American Champion, Solo Sikoa. I mean, I guess they're trying to, you know, pump up NXT and give it some, you know, credit or I guess notoriety. I was also surprised, though, in the that Carmelo Hayes wasn't mentioned at all. It was just like, oh, Solo Sikoa won the title from this kind of random guy, and that's how it happened. Because Carmelo Hayes is great, and I'm just kind of surprised his name wasn't mentioned. But regardless, Danny, I totally agree with you on that back to school collection thing. I was cracking up. That was really, really funny. I mean, honestly, with the backpack and the little pencil case, I mean, those guys were looking hilarious. And I didn't even think about what L.A. Knight said or what Max Dupree said about L.A., but I do think there might be something to that more than we think. But regardless, I'm surprised that there really is not much of an emphasis on Extreme Rules that – you see before every pay-per-view. Like, before every pay-per-view, you typically see, you know, weeks and weeks out. Like, you'll see the graphic on the bottom of the screen. You'll see, you know, things being set up for it. Like, I was surprised after, or at some point during the match, when they said, you know, the winner faces the Usos, oh, that's going to be on SmackDown next week. Like, I would have thought that that would be setting up the match for the pay-per-view. But no, it's just a SmackDown match. Kind of surprising. I mean, the only thing really that was set up for Extreme Rules is Liv Morgan tonight. And, you know, I don't want to throw so many things out there, but, you know, I do think that Liv is going to absolutely turn heel by winning. But because I think everyone thinks that, you know, Rousey's going to win. I think 90% of people would think that. But I think Liv is going to use some sort of very vicious weapon in a very heelish way to knock Ronda out and win that match and turn heel in the process. Because we haven't really seen bad Ronda Rousey. We've seen pretty likable Ronda Rousey, actually, recently. So, you know, and it does seem like Triple H has his finger on the pulse of what the people like. Like, he turned Sheamus and the Brawling Brutes, you know, good. Because he saw the reaction, I think that played a big part. And tonight you see Sheamus, he's slapping five, Butch is slapping five to the crowd down, going down the aisle. So, you know, I do think that Triple H sees that Ronda's being really liked and is going to kind of go with that. And I think Liv is going to win the match, but by a very heelish means. And that's why it is Extreme Rules. But regardless of that, I'm just surprised. Do you guys agree they're not really promoting this pay-per-view like you've seen in the past? I mean, next Friday, it's 2 weeks out. You know, we're not talking about a month out.
They do have three shows left, though. I mean, they've got next Friday and two more Fridays. So next week, they'll be 2 weeks in 2 weeks out from that weekend. But they got three shows left. I just think they'll kick it up into gear next week. I mean, yeah, there's one match that's, you know, official, I guess, with Ronda and Liv in Extreme Rules. And maybe next week's tag match leads to a rematch where they build to Extreme Rules. But they can't announce it yet because they haven't had whatever happens next week happen yet. So I guess I'm not ready to push the, you know, panic button over them not promoting this yet. I think having three solid weeks. I mean, think about AEW. I mean, the All Out lineup came together with, you know, 3-4 days to go. I wouldn't recommend that, but and that concerned me when there were only two shows left. But now we've got three shows left, so I'm okay with it. I don't think that's a concern. And by the way, I don't know that I agree that there's like this groundswell of support for Ronda. I mean, I think she's been more likable, and Liv has been less likable. But I wouldn't say that, like, you know, everything was Ronda's going to be a heel, and the fans just basically convinced Paul Levesque to turn her face. I don't think that's what's. I don't think that's. That might be going on with Brawling Brutes and Sheamus. I don't really see that going on with Ronda. I think it's a little more muddled than that. What do you think, Danny?
I agree with Brad. I was wondering when the Extreme Rules pay-per-view was going to be taking place until Liv happened to bring it up in a promo and said, on October 8th, I'm going to make – and I was like, well, actually, thank you, Liv, for that contrived message, but it actually helped me – remember when the pay-per-view was going to be. I didn't feel like they were really promoting it too heavily, aside from a commercial with Paul Heyman that they showed, I believe it was a week or two ago. It might have been during the Clash in the Castle, actually. Other than that, I feel like they haven't really talked about it much. So, I totally agree. As far as Ronda, I think she's just kind of likable in comparison to Liv, who's kind of just been annoying ever since she's been gloating about the win that she got from Ronda Rousey, even though she tapped out and everybody kind of turned on her. So in comparison to that, Ronda has been more likable, at least to me.
Cool. Brad, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, you know, just to Matt's point on damage control, I have not liked them at all. I find Bayley to be extremely annoying in this iteration. You know, she reminds me of like a, you know, divorced aunt from the Midwest who's just like, ha ha, you got, you know, you all suck. Like, she's just not, and I'm not saying not likable as a heel. There's plenty of heels that are really likable. There's plenty of heels that you can
Matt,
love,
that sounds,
you know, like,
very specific. Or Brad, that sounds very specific.
Yeah, well, you can't really... I mean, it's hard to – that's just the impression I get, you know, from her. Like, she's like this annoying, like, old woman with a short haircut. I know she's had that for a while. It's just – I don't know, man. She just doesn't seem to have any oomph. And the idea of this becoming the female bloodline and taking over the women's division, it's not something that would sit well with me. And I mean, do you guys hear out there, I mean, you guys are obviously involved in the community far more than myself. I mean, do you see a lot of love for this group? Like, do you see, like you might get for a Seth Rollins or Becky Lynch as a heel or, you know, the bloodline. I mean, do you see the heel love for this group? Because I don't think it's really working, honestly.
Not sure you're talking to the right host and co-host to tell you about the larger overview of social media reaction or Reddit reaction to them. Because I'm just so busy doing my stuff, I'm not necessarily have my finger on the pulse of being able to assess your specific question in terms of how much buzz there is for them. Other than I'm not completely isolated from it, and I don't see a buzz for them. And I'm not hearing other people who are on social media a lot more indicating that they're, you know, this red hot group. They're not, you know. I mean, I'm not against the faction. I'm holding out hope. I haven't given up on them. But, I mean, Brad, you described well what's not working. That said, there's a lot of talent on that team. There is. And there's still room for them to do something. But maybe getting criticized and not getting the type of heat they're looking for and getting some feedback from people in the back who they trust will kick them in the butt a little bit to come up with a more refined identity and come up with something a little more creative. But, yeah, I'll say it for probably the third time in the show. Bayley looks like someone who's happy to collect a paycheck and live on her laurels and go through the motions, and she thinks that's good enough. And I don't think that's what anybody was hoping for when she was, you know, going to come back from her layoff. I think people wanted to see her come out and show fire and be energized and have enthusiasm and have a bunch of pent-up creativity ready to roll. That hasn't been the case. So let's hope they can correct course or improve.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you, guys. Great show, and I'll let you move on to Evan, who I think has about 18 seconds, if I'm counting correctly. So there you go.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brad.
All right.
Thanks, good hearing from you. You can still call into the show if you're joining our live stream in progress here. The number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That place you on the switchboard. We welcome first-time callers, people we haven't heard from in a while, and our regulars. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you're wondering how to live stream the show because you're listening to us on demand after the fact, all you have to do is go to pwtorch.com and look at my TV report. And at the top and bottom, there's a link to our live stream that starts about 5 minutes or so after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also go to our Twitter account at PWTorch, and when the shows end, I am tweeting out on that account a link to the show along with a phone number and email. And you can also just take the, I was going to call it a shortcut, but it's a little longer because it's not a direct link, but WadeKellerPostShow.com will take you to a page where you can navigate to the live stream. So lots of ways to find us if you want to listen live, but of course, most of you listen by downloading the show later, and that's where emailing us to participate in the show probably works best for you. And we'll get to some emails momentarily. But first up, Evan in Chicago. Evan, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, guys. Really quick, Brad, thank you for giving Wade another reason to cut me off so soon. Yeah, that's going to be something that's going to stick with me for a while, especially when I'm crying about Sheamus.
Evan, you got to admit, if I didn't jump in, there'd be like 15 minutes would go by before you paused or threw to us.
Yeah, no. But what I was trying to say was, still crying a little bit about Sheamus not getting the win over Gunther. Great match overall, and I'm glad we have the reception that kind of proves that, you know, even in defeat, that Sheamus isn't nor has ever been a guy who has been afraid to step up and shine with these guys who really, really need guys like him to be there for them. Whether it's the Brawling Brutes, the work that he did with Cesaro way back when, you know, he's been a guy that's really been in his own element wherever he's been. And that's just something that I wasn't planning on touching on initially, but you know what? It's you know, why not? It's there, it's hot, and you know what? It's Sheamus. So why not really speak on a man who's really really had the back of this business the way it's been carrying him in a direction where I feel like it's been pushing him where he really wants to be for it.
I've been a fan of Sheamus, more of a fan of Sheamus than most, I think, for a while. And I think he's, if it was unjustified a few years ago, I think it's, he has done a good job proving me right that there's more in him. And I look forward to his matches. I really look forward to that Gunther match. I thought it was, you know, a 4-star-plus match and a standout match this year. Michael Cole, interestingly, is saying it might be the match of the year, which even in the WWE realm is a pretty big deal to say about Sheamus and Gunther when, you know, there's been some pretty spectacular matches with bigger names who might take issue with that, although maybe they wouldn't because they're admiring what Gunther and Sheamus did more than anyone. But I'm excited for where they go with Sheamus the rest of this year and into next year. And I don't know if there's a reason that they keep him away from Reigns, but I'd like to see a babyface Sheamus against Roman Reigns on a pay-per-view. Danny, what's been your journey with Sheamus as a fan?
That's exactly what I was about to say. He should be one of the challengers to Reigns before he loses or presumably loses sometime next year. But, yeah, I've always been a big Sheamus fan. I know a lot of the big knock on him when he first got his big push around 2010 was, oh, it's because he's Triple H's workout buddy and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like everybody kind of held some resentment towards him for that, for his big early push. But now I feel like we talked about Damage Control, seeing if they been getting love online. I've been seeing a lot of Sheamus love, and rightfully so. I'm happy for him. I'm glad he's finally getting his credit for he's always put on good matches. As far as the promos and the personality, kind of were wishy-washy a bit sometimes, but I feel like he's really just settled in that role as I just go in, I have hard-hitting matches. I'll let my work speak for itself, but at the same time, he has a great personality, and he is charismatic in his own way, and so I love Sheamus. He's awesome, and I'm glad to see him getting the respect and the adulation he deserves.
Cool. Evan, what else for us?
Yeah, 2015, what a time to be a WWE fan, right? His I believe that was his last heavyweight championship reign, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, even then, you know, it's times like those where you got to respect him for the fight that he's been putting up, even recapturing the United States Championship, the Intercontinental, because, you know, that's the championship that has been eluding him, right? But you see Sheamus and you think of guys that have came up around the times that he has been champion, has been carrying these guys, Kofi Kingston, even Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. You know, it's really these doors that he's been opening that really transcended so many people in so many different directions that can easily open the door for a topic like Damage Control to come up, because, you know, we're talking about internet and Twitter and who's getting on who or who's, you know, on top of who and everything like that. And honestly, with me and how Damage Control is looking right now, I believe Bayley is cool, calm, and collected. And I wouldn't really rush how she's been approaching her play in Damage Control, only because of the way that Raquel Gonzalez has been performing. And to be honest with you, even with these little fabrics of surprises that, you know, the media is saying Triple H is going to be planning to throw out there, whatever, tonight has really been something for Raquel Gonzalez to stand on, because to me, honestly, if it wasn't for the arrival of Dakota Kai, Io Sky, Raquel Gonzalez, in my opinion, would have turned on Aaliyah. And, you know, that title reign, as lengthy as it could have gone, Dakota Kai and Io Sky really deserve that title push that they've gotten. So even in defeat, seeing Shotzi Blackheart come out and have her back, you know, really, really made me feel some sense of pride and belief that, you know, this can really do something for Bayley and even for, you know, Raquel Gonzalez celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month and, you know, the time that it's being for these guys. And it's really looking good for them, and it's really looking good for the division, and I like where it's going right now.
Danny, what's your take on that vision for things?
So I am pretty hopeful about the women's division. I don't feel like it's in a great position right now, though. I feel like we're a far cry away from the women's revolution that was so heavily touted a couple of years ago. I guess that's just because Becky's out, Charlotte's out, Bayley's still trying to find her footing, Sasha's gone. But I feel like we'll be getting some of them back here pretty soon, and that's gonna be the people that you want to lean on, Charlotte, Bayley. Hopefully Sasha will see her again. Will be the people that they need to lean on to bring up some of the less established talent. I feel like with one of those three competitors, and Io Sky can have a good long match with one of them and really, really show everybody what she's all about, and then really break out and be put on as like, this is a legit competitor. This is who you need to be watching. And I just feel like those veteran presences of superstars are really going to be what help elevate the division. So I feel like we really need those Beckys and Charlottes and Sasha's back if we're going to really go into that next women's revolution, if I can coin a Stephanie phrase, I guess you could say.
Yes. Cool. Evan, back to you.
Yeah. Like you said, that presence, logistically, the numbers, it really gave me some way to find some love for how Raquel Gonzalez carried herself tonight. And, you know, honestly, again, I've been saying this since she stepped foot on the main roster. Her future is bright. She carries herself with such a bright, you know, manner. And, you know, I can see a lot of potential in, you know, her direction and the way she's been moving. And you know what? It's great to see her. And I want to touch Logan Paul, but I don't know how much time I got left. I just want to say
Evan, we're just giving you a hard time. You're good.
Yeah, no.
It was just a bit.
Him performing in the same ring as Floyd Mayweather on two different platforms makes this even a tougher task for Logan Paul to have on his shoulders, especially when it comes to, is he getting over with the crowd, or how does he believe that he's fitting in with the WWE universe? And you know what, from the jump, ever since I've first seen him in the crowd when they first introduced him, I don't think he really, you know, had in the back of his mind an idea that he would be receiving a warm welcome from the WWE universe. But now it's about, you know, hey, I'm stepping up because, you know, I've stood toe-to-toe with these guys, and they've been in these situations. They've been in this ring. So what makes you think that I can't be in the same predicament and take on the challenge, the toughest challenge that, you know, can be in front of me right now, which is right now the tribal chief, the head of the table, Roman Reigns, the champion.
Danny, your thoughts? I mean, I don't know if we fully talked through Logan yet. I think there's more to say.
Mr. Logan Paul. Yeah, I'm going to put on my Paul Heyman voice there. So this guy, I'm not a fan of him. He's obnoxious. He's entitled. He is a windbag, whatever you want to call him. But that is excellent for professional wrestling, and he needs to lean into that, and he needs to embrace that, and he needs to be that heel ASAP. That is his calling. That's what he needs to be. That's the character he needs to play, and he needs to do it soon, because that's what we all see him as, and that's where he's going to have his biggest success. That's what's going to lead him into being possibly a huge babyface. Once we, like you said, Wade, once we get all that hate out of our system for him, then one day we can love him. It happened to The Rock. It happened to Boston. It happened to all those guys. So we need to be able to do that. That's the way. I don't know why they're fighting against this. They need to just let the guy be a heel. That is who he is. He is a heel. He's a heel. I just think of Bruce Prichard when I said he's a heel. Yeah, he's a heel. That is what he needs to do. So the sooner he's a heel, he could really take. He could take WWE by storm if they just let him be that hateable heel that he is. He's already got the ring mechanics down. No problems there. He just needs to lean into that heel character, and he'll be great.
Danny, you do a great job with your Raw Alt Perspective reports at pwtorch.com. Alex McDonald, does a great job with the SmackDown All Perspective reports on Friday nights at pwtorch.com. So everybody listening, you know, open up some tabs on your phone or your laptop and check out their reports. Alex McDonald wrote this tonight after the Logan Paul segment in his analysis. Because our TV reports at pwtorch.com, for those who aren't going there, it's not just what happened. We pull out our opinions. So if you just want to read our opinions, you can just read those and scroll through all the details of what happened on the show. Here's his instant analysis on Logan Paul. How's that Logan Paul babyface run going? If this crowd is any indication, not well. I can't believe this guy isn't self-aware enough to realize that being a douchebag is what made him famous in the first place. People don't like him, and they likely never will. It doesn't help matters that he's not relatable at all to the average wrestling fan. The thought of him holding his own in a match against Reigns is a terrible idea. On top of that, if he's a babyface, why didn't he say anything when Reigns was in the interview? Why would a babyface talk trash after the guy left? If they indeed go in this direction, Reigns should dispose of him fairly quickly. If they go the Sami Zayn route, I'm okay with that, and it actually has some fun possibilities. Well put, Alex. the idea that he was denying what he said or trying to frame what he said in the podcast. Well, I just said if I face him, I think it'll be my match. He won't even he's using a euphemism for, I think I'll beat him. And what's more arrogant than a guy with how many matches? You know, count him on one hand.
Two matches. Yeah, one was a tag match.
One hand with three amputations. It's arrogant. It's delusional. It's suspension of disbelief breaking. It's offensive that he would be elevated to this level. And again, I think there's going to be some Saudi Arabia pushback on this because wrestling fans in the United States, Canada, Australia, UK, on and on, they want WWE to be booked for them, not the Saudi royal family, not some rich crown prince. They want to think the booking is being driven by what makes the most sense in the cadence that fans are used to in terms of selling tickets to actual wrestling shows as part of the tour and annual big events. And this feels like it's being rushed and wedged in to be that novelty that Saudi Arabia wants to justify the money they're paying. So there's a chance there's a backlash to this, and there's a chance it actually hurts the bloodline. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, the pay is crazy good for anyone who's going to Saudi Arabia working top matches, and that, you know, for better or for worse, softens some of the pain or frustration that some people are feeling. But I bet if you ask some of the people in the bloodline how they feel about this, they're like, this could screw up a good thing that we got going if we've got to now try to be heels opposite of this douchebag, this unself-aware douchebag who's unrelatable, to use Alex McDonald's words. So, yeah, it's tune in for the car wreck. It's going to be entertaining, and then it'll be over, you know, when Crown Jewel's over, and then Logan will go away for a while and hopefully come back as embracing his douchebaggery, as Pat McAfee might put it.
Well, Wade, I thought for a split second about watching Crown Jewel, but then I forget my annual tradition of skipping Crown Jewel and unofficially boycotting it. So, unless you want me to cover it, which I'm more than willing to do for the torch, but as far as Crown Jewel, I'll pretty much always skip it.
Yeah, or you know, blood money, as Todd Martin has popularized the term for it. Yeah, Evan, back to you.
Yeah, it's just these little things that I feel as though that we need to, as fans, stay desperate for. And I wouldn't mind that, especially for a guy like Logan Paul, if he really feels as though, you know, he can come in and do something with guys who have really been in the game and have done things that change the way we see innovation within the business. And you know, that speaks to his work with The Miz. It speaks to his work right now with, guys like Ricochet, who was having his back, and, you know, Solo was there. So that was interesting to see that, you know, correlate, you know, within the time that it has. So, I'm excited to be excited for it. And, you know, I can't wait to see what that's going to bring us within the next few months.
Cool. Evan, anything else for us?
Yeah, yep. That's pretty much it for me. Go Raquel.
Cool.
And, yeah, we'll see you next NXT Tuesday, I guess, yeah.
Excellent. Sounds good. Thanks, Evan.
All right. Thanks, Evan.
Bye.
Want to get to an email about Logan Paul here, if I can find it. Yeah, here we go. Zach in Texas. We finally got Triple H's first massive blunder, booking Paul or Logan Paul. I wouldn't even be surprised if I call him Paul Logan like half the time. booking Logan Paul in a championship match against Roman Reigns. I've been saying it since Clash at the Castle, but once Roman beat Drew, WWE effectively killed any real interest in Roman Reigns title matches because nobody's going to buy that the opponent has a real chance. This decision seems to indicate that WWE agrees, that they recognize any actual wrestler in a match with Reigns won't generate investment, so they're going to go with a freak show match and hoping there's enough perverse interest in what Reigns can get out of this obnoxious joke to get people to watch the Blood Money show. I just hope they aren't seriously considering putting Paul over in any capacity, even including having Theory catch in and Paul pin him. Logan Paul with the Universal title would make the David Arquette controversy seem minuscule by comparison. Would Logan Paul winning the WWE title be worse than David Arquette? And I think you can make that case, because David Arquette was not a champion who was presenting himself as if you should take him seriously as a champion. It was a fluke. It was a novelty. As Vince Russo said, it was just to get headlines in USA Today for whatever that was worth, which wasn't much, but back then more than it would be today. So, yes, WWE would get tons of social media buzz, but it would be one of those things where people who don't watch wrestling and never will get a kick out of it, and it confirms why they don't watch wrestling. It's just a freak show. It's just silliness. And wrestling fans would be upset. So I think it would be a huge mistake under any circumstances to have Logan Paul hold a championship, one or both. I'm going to be scared if at that press conference Logan says, I don't want the Universal title. That's not the one I grew up watching. Just put the WWE title on the line. If he says that, I'm going to be really nervous.
That it means he's winning the way.
Exactly. I'm putting that out in the universe, and I shouldn't. But I think WWE is cognizant of Zach's perspective being a common perspective. And it's so weird because Logan Paul can't play, you know, the humble guy because that's not how he promotes his fights. You know, he promotes his fights, to the best of my knowledge, being brash and confident. And it just doesn't work in a pro wrestling context if you're a babyface against a guy like Roman Reigns, who fans are already have been warming up to because he's so damn cool. He's having good matches. He's gone through the hazing, so to speak, of being, you know, a booed babyface, a booed heel, and now he's just so damn cool and having good matches and part of a cool group. So and holds the undisputed top title in this industry. You know, John Moxley and AEW. I mean, if he wins the title again, but right now it's vacant. So anyway, Danny, any more thoughts on that?
As soon as I saw that Logan Paul was going to confront the Bloodline, I was like, oh, well, they're baby faces now because that nobody's going to cheer Logan Paul over the Bloodline. The Bloodline are cool. They're awesome. They're great wrestlers. And Logan Paul's just some celebrity douchebag, as we said here. So we're not cheering Logan Paul over who we feel are our guys. The Bloodline are our guys, whether they're heels or baby faces or whatever, they're our guys. That guy's an outsider. So under no circumstances should, for one, as we said, the title shouldn't even be on the line. Logan Paul should be beaten in about 5 minutes. That's probably too long. But I will say it's probably a perfect match for Saudi Arabia just because, that should be where the freak shows happen if they want to do them, because those shows, to me, as far as they don't matter. So, put it over there. I don't have to really care about it, and I know it won't be of much consequence. So, but Logan Paul, no. I don't care how many headlines you get, how many – I don't know if you're going to get advertising dollars or anything from that, but it's not worth it. You can't tell me Drew McIntyre, John Cena, or Kevin Owens or any of those guys are not good enough to win the title, but Logan freaking Paul is? No, no, not buying it.
Yeah. Another email kind of down on things right now. Joe from New York says, hey, guys, tonight's SmackDown, I was done with it by 9:15. I think that's East Coast time. So let's see, that's hour 15 minutes in. Okay. I walked away from my TV. I felt like it felt like a show of filler. I think WWE thinks they can give us 3 15-minute matches and bring up the bloodline every 5 minutes, and that equals a good show. First of all, I'm no fan of Logan Paul. The guy means nothing to me. Maybe it's because I'm 42, but I never even heard of the guy before he showed up in WWE, but I don't see why he's a big deal. By the way, WWE should be like concerned about this. I mean, they have an older viewing audience, and they're key. They are key to the ratings and the big TV deals they get. Logan Paul plays well in terms of getting a buzz on social media with younger people, but their audience skews older, and that 18 to 49 demo is important, and the older half is what carries WWE. I think there are a lot of people who just aren't into him. So anyway, back to Joe. He goes, also, I'm not a guy who thinks Roman's title reign is all that great. Big deal. He held the title for over 700 days, and he's beating a roster full of mid-carders other than Lesnar. The guy showed he really does not care much about the business. He didn't even finish the biggest title reign of his career before he went to the part-time contract. So if Roman is not beating a mid-carder, he's sitting home adding days to his title reign, doing nothing. Plus, I don't see WWE getting anyone even ready to take the title off Roman. They have no main eventers. Putting a wrestler in the main event does not make them a main eventer. Triple H has a lot of work to do. So far, his big plan to make things better is to give matches 15 to 20 minutes instead of 5 and to push talent who were hot in NXT 5 to 7 years ago, who were misused by Vince on the main roster in recent years. It's going to take more than that to get this company hot again. Danny, it's a good excuse. You can pluck anything from that email you want to be specific about, but I'll also broaden it out and just ask you for your impression of what Polovic's done so far since taking over for Vince McMahon. Joe is framing it quite negatively, but it matches earlier. I'm trying to remember whose friend. One of our callers had a friend who was very down on the product. I'm trying to remember who that was, but who just thought, oh, it's NXT people I don't know and don't care about.
I think it was Mike.
Oh, Mike from Jersey. Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think? I mean, and don't let those opinions sway you, because I mean, I'm largely happy with Triple H, even though I, you know, was upset with last week's finishes in some of the key matches. I think he's doing a good job, and I don't have nearly the problem that Mike's friend did in terms of the NXT talent being brought up. And I'm not a huge fan of Karrion Kross. I've been critical of his performances in NXT.
Oh, wait, you've been killing Karrion Kross, but I love it. I'm on the same side of the fence as you are.
Yes, but I'm not rooting against him to be better. It's definitely not personal. I'm just being forthright in what I see and what I think will work and what I think won't work. And sometimes it's just a personal opinion. In the case of Kross, I think they've made some good improvements in his presentation, even compared to NXT, where I just felt he's getting in the way of what NXT's brand was about. I think he's less in the way of what the WWE brand is about when he's being portrayed this way on the main roster. I think it's a better fit for him. We'll see. I reserve the right to, you know, be all over him again. But so I'm largely liking what I'm seeing with Paul Levesque. I think the absence of irritants is a big plus. You know, we don't have the 24/7 nonsense. But it's not perfect, and it's a work in progress, and it's more his territory now. He inherited the SummerSlam lineup and had to deal with, that was his first show. Inherited that, and largely the storylines going into the Clash. So, and he probably doesn't have a choice in this Logan Paul thing, to be honest. I mean, when I say he doesn't have a choice, he's the guy. He and Stephanie are running the thing. But like when it gets right down to it, if this is sort of the lay of the land based on what Saudi Arabia wants and the deal that with Logan Paul, I'm not saying Levesque's not enthusiastic about it. It might be the thing that just makes sense to do, but I don't want to judge his long-term booking prospects based on this sort of tempting inevitability of Logan Paul getting some sort of, you know, buzz generating match in Saudi Arabia. If that sort of was the direction of things. So I don't want to make excuses for him, and I'm going to keep praise and criticize as I see fit, but largely I'm quite optimistic about what I've seen so far. But you know, we've got some pushback, and that's worth being open-minded to if people are getting frustrated already. So how about you, Danny?
So I've been feeling at first it was oh, praise Triple H. He's done the unthinkable, turned WWE around. And I've come back to it. I was very enthusiastic about it to begin with. I've come back down to a little bit more of a realistic level, and just like the analogy you've been working on, life by a thousand rays of light, vitamins, Band-Aids, et cetera. But yeah, the absence of annoyance. So yeah, it's just the little things, but I've liked what I've seen. I don't feel as dumb for noticing things that inconsistencies and continuities and things of that nature. And there's just been more focus on the storytelling. So I've been liking that. I've been largely positive on what Triple H has done. And I came right in as those changes were happening, as the Raw All Perspective contributor. So it was perfect timing. So yeah, I've really liked what he's done. I feel like in the last couple of weeks though, it's almost felt a little still Vince McMahon-ish, but I understand he has the kind of implement slow changes. It can't just be drastic changes overnight for everything. So I've largely been positive about that. So I've liked what he's done. I still think he has a long way to go. Of course, he's still got a long way to turn this thing around. Because it still feels a bit sanitized. It still has that old Vince McMahon stink on it. So I think it's going to take a little while to get that off of it. But I think once he gets his, in about a year or so, he'll probably have his handprints over everything. And another comment on one thing, I am not mad at Roman Reigns for taking the quote-unquote part-time contract because, hey, it has upped his stock as a champion. If somebody offers you a part-time less dates, that man's got a family. He's got kids. He wants to spend time with his kids. He wants to relax, heal up his body. I mean, you'd be a fool not to take it. So yep. You got the negotiating power, take it. That's what you got to do. That's what it's all about. Anybody else in this position would do the same thing. So I'm not mad at him for that. And it keeps the championship strong. It keeps him strong. So not mad at him at all for that. But Triple H, I give him a thumbs up. But I'm judging him very closely in the upcoming year. So I'll have an eye on him, and I hope he makes big improvements.
It seems weird to say, but I mean, Roman Reigns is 37 years old. He's not 32. He's put in his year. He's put in years. And go ahead, Danny.
No, yeah, that's, you hit the nail right on the head. You've been covering wrestling for a while. I go back and read those back issues every day. So I see how you've been covering the business for a long time, and disputes, creative disputes, money disputes, contract disputes. People, any wrestler in that position would love that. They want to heal up their body. Nobody wants to be beating themselves down forever. Just anybody that's mad at that, I'm not talking about the emailer, but you know, anybody that's mad about that backstage or anything is just mad because they're not in that position. They don't have that. So just get like him. That's what you got to do. Get where he's at. Ask him for some knowledge so you can get like he is. So. Yeah. I'm not mad at him.
He's a year younger, 1 year younger than Kevin Owens. You know,
oh, wow.
I mean, yeah, it's just like, so, and he is, you know, he's got kids, and I agree with you. And I think the fact that they advertise that he's going to be on the show being a big deal has it built some equity in him being a special star who's got the pull to pick and choose when he shows up. And I think Ronda Rousey being around more often, you know, it can be helpful if she can kind of figure out the way to portray herself, you know, her character. Because she, as a baby face, the perception was, you walked in with your MMA credentials and you just thought you own this place and you got big star money. Now put in more effort to earn it. And I think that's people's attitude towards baby faces. But they saw Reigns do that. As much as they booed him as a baby face in the Shield or especially after breaking from the Shield, there's a respect for his performances and working the house show circuit. And he was part of that summer of Daniel Bryan where Bryan broke out and they were having those crazy great matches at house shows and the crowd was going nuts for Bryan and Roman was part of that. And Roman's gotten better and he's growing and he's, you know, he's, yeah. So if he's a babyface celebrity and he's working part-time, that's one thing. And that's where, like, if Logan Paul just started working the house show circuit, you know, and did that for a couple of years, working house shows and getting better, you know, I think people would be more accepting of him getting this spot. And
yeah,
I think
totally.
That would be in the, you know, they're in this conundrum where, well, we got to strike while the iron's hot with him. And, you know, he's realistically got too much money. He's too famous. He's not going to work a full-time schedule, but along with that comes fan pushback and rejection. And that's what they're going to face. And I don't think I think Reigns has earned his keep enough at this point. And then there's just something about being the guy who doesn't have to show up every week that makes his character seem like a bigger big shot.
Yeah, exactly. People around my age, I'm 34, so people around my age especially, we're used to Rock and Stone Cold showing up every week, being on TV every single week. But we got to remember, that was a totally different time. That was when TV ratings were the be-all, end-all, Monday Night Wars, all that kind of stuff. So we get a little resentful by nature of people not being there every single week. Like, and that's what they were taping shows sometimes and doing all kinds of other stuff. But yeah, we were so used to Stone Cold and Rock being there every week. And so, the top guy needs to be there every week and be doing it. But, you know, different time. That man has earned he's earned what he has. So I'm happy for him, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. All right. This is something that hasn't been brought up yet. Jimmy from Brockton, Mass. Just says, hey, Wade, do you think Braun changed his finisher to the powerbomb because they want to show up more, though? Like, our big guy can do this better than your big guy. Thanks. It didn't even cross my mind. I don't think Wardlow's a big enough deal yet. I know he did something on Rampage tonight. Spoiler alert. Check out pwtorch.com for details on that. I don't think so. I don't think that's what they're doing. But, I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm not, I can't, if somebody said definitively, yeah, you know, they wanted to do that and kind of take some of the shine away from Wardlow. But the fact is that the level that WWE's at, you know, being, you know, 10 times the revenue draw that AEW is, and SmackDown doubling a good ratings week for them. And AEW had a good ratings week this week, but it was still half of what SmackDown did last week, because SmackDown last Friday popped a higher viewership number than normal. So it's a 2-to-1 ratio of their two A shows. Broadcast TV is an advantage. There's all kinds of advantages WWE has, but it's just a fact, you know, double the rating. I don't know that they want to, like, be doing things that seem like they're counterbooking AEW at this point. I think AEW has to make a few more inroads before Paul Levesque wants to do that. So that's my take, Danny.
Yeah, we know WWE's petty, but I don't think they're that petty. Maybe Strowman just wanted a new finisher. I mean, he had the power slam before, but no, I don't think that's a slight war, though.
Yeah. I think we kind of covered everything. Is there anything else on your mind or in your notes or anything that they might want to bring up?
Let me check my notes here.
Yeah.
A couple of things. One thing I put is just a little quick hits, I guess you could say. Madcap Moss, he still doesn't have a design on his tights. That still bothers me.
Yep.
They just got to give him plain black trunks. Come on.
And a new nickname.
Madcap Moss sounds like a silent movie actor from the 20s. They need to change that. ASAP. Samantha Irvin, the ring announcer, she's really good. I feel like she doesn't get any credit. She really just hits the inflections on everything very well. I just noticed that. And Karrion Kross, horrible gimmick. I hate his gimmick. I hate the black and white in the promo, whatever. The black and white on the screen when he's attacking somebody, that is just so stupid. I cannot stand supernatural characters in wrestling. Just because it worked for The Undertaker and Kane does not mean it'll work for everybody. Please stop. 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 Stop.
I'm with you. I know there's some people who think, hey, that's just what WWE does. Get over it. And it's like, no. Just because they do something dumb year after year, decade after decade, doesn't mean they get grandfathered in as a good idea that we should all embrace. And there's a lot of convenient things that happen in pro wrestling that we get used to. A screen going to black and white when somebody is interrupting a major singles match means the company's in on it. And it just completely breaks any sense that – because to me, like, it should be a rare exception and for damn good reason that pro wrestling feels that a pro wrestling show feels like anything more than cameras are pointing at the ring and set up backstage to try to catch the chaos and unpredictability that is pro wrestling. And when you start making it look like it's overproduced and planned and that the company's in on it, whether it's stationing a handheld camera in the crowd for a brawl that happens to go into the crowd, or having security clear the concourse before wrestlers just happen to decide at the last second to go brawl up there, or having a dumbass fake popcorn stand that doesn't look like anything unless you're in 1972, or having a screen go to black and white. Like, it's one thing for, like, the Fiend, or, you know, like a wrestler where it's like there's a sense of, like, okay, that's something that's planned ahead of time because we know his match is happening and we're going to flood the arena with red light or something. I don't like that. But it's more believable that, like, well, yeah, we just kind of think it's cool and we planned ahead. But when Karrion Kross runs in and then the screen goes to black and white, it's like, well, who made that happen? That means you knew he was about to interfere. And that breaks the whole immersion of this guy. I should be mad at him because he just ruined Drew McIntyre's chance at revenge. So it's dumb for a lot of reasons. It's like the car cam, you know, and,
oh,
you know, also there's
the Shane McMahon, AJ Styles deal.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Yep. Yep. And AEW did that once. They did that once with, what tag team was it? And I texted Tony Khan and I'm like, I think I just went, no. Then explain why. And he texted back and he's like, well, you know, we tapped into, you know, cars have cameras now. And I'm like, nope,
no.
Doesn't work for me.
He didn't slam him into the license plate or like a license plate backup camera or something. Like, what?
Yeah, somehow the director at the control board patched into a car cam. I'm like, I'm trying to remember what tag team was it that – it's so crazy. I can't remember the tag team that did it. But nevertheless, and I was just like, I just said something effective. I hope you never do that again. And he hasn't. So I'm happy. Cause,
thank you, Wade.
And part of the reason is, people can disagree with me philosophically and go, hey, I'm going to do that stuff. Deal with it. And fine. I mean, it's your company and I'll criticize it, but I mean, whatever. It's not the end of the world. But with Tony, he had told me in the interview the week before Dynamite or the day before Dynamite launched, he's like, we're not going to have invisible cameras back. And he hasn't. You know, we're all like when Moxley like is being followed by a camera guy, they show him going, hey, camera dude, follow me. Like they always have an explanation for cameras backstage. So it was such a break from something that Tony had expressed was important to him. And so I appreciate that aspect of AEW. And I'm a little worried with Paul Levesque that's not going to be as important to him. But I'm hopeful because in NXT, I think he's done a nice job. You know, the roving camera guy in Impact, TNA Impact did this too, where like, well, we just sort of have a freelance camera guy just roaming around looking for stuff. And if there's noise or he gets a tip, he runs and checks things out. I'm okay with that too. I just want it to feel happenstance. That keeps me immersed in the idea that there's this chaotic world and the cameras are giving us a window into it. Instead of the cameras are set up to film this very organized, preordained show. I just think pro wrestling doesn't work as well.
It
when that's not a presentation. Yeah, so.
It does
not. Danny, anything else?
No, I think other than that, we hit everything. Thanks for inviting me to the show here. I appreciate it. It was a blast.
It was very fun having you on. I appreciate you agreeing with me on things that I think are absolute truths. you've got very good opinions, but obviously feel free to disagree with me too when those occasions come up. But no, this is a real pleasure. We'll have you back.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Danny. So check out his reports, pwtorch.com, every Monday night. So that coverage goes up on Monday nights covering Raw. I've got my report, Danny's got his, and then Fridays, check out my reports and Alex's. And on Wednesdays, I cover Dynamite, and Tyler Sage also has another report. So that's a way if one of us is a little behind on the show or misses a detail, you can bounce between two tabs and keep hitting refresh and keep up on our thoughts on the show and also fill in gaps if you're not watching it or you had to step away or people are being distracting in your house and you want to know what you missed. Lots of reasons to open up your phone, tablet, or laptop to pwtorch.com while you're watching wrestling. All right, that does it for me for today. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, our listeners, and we'll talk to y'all next time.